some things are tried and true, are always going to work the same way, no matter what you do. So I've had to learn how to be humble and be the dumbest person in the room and accept the fact that I don't know, accept the fact that I need to learn, and realize you're always learning no matter what.
Hello there and welcome back to the My Future Business Show. It's Rick Nusky here. I'm your host. I'm the luckiest person in the world to be able to host this show. It's been such a pleasure over the years bringing you wonderful guests. Now, with that in mind, on today's show, I have the pleasure of welcoming author, transformational coach, and serial entrepreneur Darius D. Man Ross to talk about the TPS Blueprint, which is his framework for turning trauma into triumph and building a life and business on your own terms. So to say that there's a bit to unpack here, Darius, would probably be an understatement.
Yes, sir. I look forward to having a great time today.
Absolutely. So where are you calling in from today?
I'm in New York.
New York. Now, I know that you moved between Fort Kent and Manhattan. They're very different places. What appeals to you about those two different locations?
New York City is the metropolitan, cosmopolitan, and the diversity. And Maine is, I get a chance to drive my ATVs, jet skis, and be a country boy and do the whole 9 yards of the outdoor woods. I own a lot of land up there, so it's an
advantage. I tell you what, talk about a contrast. Tell me a little bit about your hobbies. You mentioned your ATVs. What's your main thing?
I love the mud bogging and the ATVs are riding around, the snowmobiling. And just being able to be out there in the land and just the crispness of it all, you know, chopping down a pine tree. You know, I hadn't really got involved with pine trees as a kid.
Yep.
I would see them. And, you know, now that I have them out in the yard, it's like they're regulars and I got almost 100 plus acres of them all over the place. So I'm eating, breathing and sleeping and being able to enjoy growing, you know, vegetables and even having animals. It's a cool thing.
I tell you what, reconnecting with, our planet and the Earth, how important that is that to have that sort of downtime for you?
Absolutely, it's a must. I mean, when you get to a place where the only thing that works is your satellite phone, and when I go to one side of the house, I'm in Canada, on the other side of the house, I'm in the States, and literally, there's no phone service, you know, minus the Starlink. Thank you very much, as I say, to Starlink for that. There would be no communication, so it's living off of the grid, so to speak.
Now, tell me, though, in all that isolation, I suspect there's lots of fields to play golf, but there any good golf courses around?
There are a few down near Bangor and Portland and Augusta, but up in this area, I actually created my own.
Oh, wow.
You know, I had to create my own space, so I took about half an acre, cleared it off, and created my own golf course.
Now, I can help you core your grass. That's about how good I am at golf. How about you? Are you very good at it, or?
Hey, my average is like 0.00. hit the ball, though. As the ladies always say to me, you can't hit the hole. I go, I try.
I love it. Now, tell me a little bit about when you go out and about, like when you are in Manhattan and the likes. Do you get out for a meal? And what's your favorite foods when you do?
I am a steak taco guy. I am a guy that enjoys Italian food and, particularly speaking here, Thai food.
Oh, I'll tell you what, making me hungry already.
Oh yeah.
And when you're out where you are, on the border of the Canada and where you are, what do you have there?
I pretty much cook at home because, you know, you can grow so many things there, and so, you know, it's like either I'm doing like the Weight Watchers meal, that kind of thing, because I was doing Ozempic for a while, and you know, I found out that, you know, during COVID, most people gained a lot of weight. So I went down from like almost 280 down to like 240. So
yeah.
For me now, it's like doing a very healthy meal choice type of thing. You
know, yeah, fantastic.
Vegetables and so forth.
That's got it. You got to take care of yourself. It's the only one you've got, isn't it? Your body?
Yes, sir. You have to be very aware, especially at this age. I'm 61 now, and so many of my friends are deceased. And so, you know,
yep.
Growing up, you know, there were so many people that went through so many challenges. And so just getting to this point of being alive and breathing and appreciating the fact that, hey, life is not given. It's something that you got to appreciate every single day.
It's a privilege, that's for sure and certain. Now, you earlier touched on your childhood. You were born in Laurel, Mississippi, raised in Chicago. What's one memory from that time that maybe shapes how you think today, do you think?
Interestingly speaking, it was just looking at the street pharmacists, as we call it that. And folks that are probably listening will understand what street pharmacists are. They're otherwise known as gentlemen that do some ill-gotten gains.
I got it.
That changed my mindset because, you know, I realized that Wall Street, when I got to New York, and in Chicago, the Chicago border trade, it's no difference than being on the streets and doing drug dealing and hustling. The only difference of it is the kids on the streets just don't have a chance. Mm-hmm. And those that end up on Wall Street and the Ivy League schools got the leg up. And that's what shaped my mindset. It's like, you know what? I don't want to end up incarcerated. I do not want to end up behind anybody's bars or laying dead on the street corner. So I want to turn around and do the Wall Street way.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a deep dive into that in momentarily. But I'd love to talk about what a day looks like for you. Are you an early riser? Because obviously you're busy as an investor, an author, a coach, speaker. How do you pack so much into your days?
My day actually never stops. I mean, I'm a 24/7 guy. It's yep. like I end up sleeping at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, getting an hour's rest, and then I'm up again on the move. And for the rest of the day, it's on the move. It's between looking at deals, looking at investors, looking at other people to do deals with, looking at opportunities, visiting other cities in the general area, and more importantly speaking, just being able to stay positioned in the negotiations, because I probably read on a weekly basis maybe 1,000 magazines and books.
Wow.
So I'm constantly consuming knowledge and information and staying on top of the game.
Yeah, you have to stay at the pointy end, as they say. Now, you refer to yourself as a serial entrepreneur. Now, tell me, what was your very first time you made money by solving problems for other people? Can you recall?
Well, the thing about it was that it's the term I call it is serial entrepreneur, but there's a term now that I call an acquisition entrepreneur. Acquiring businesses that nobody wants or nobody thinks that they want. And so my first experience was actually helping a professor of mine buy a house down in Southern Illinois. And as a result of that, it was an act called the Community Reinvestment Act. So I was able to help them buy based upon the fact there were lack of minorities in this community. So that was my first problem solving. After that, it was just like all downhill. Every time I saw a situation that was uncomfortable, I created it. So in the 70s, there was something in these black exploitation films they call The Man. So I said, you know what? I'm going to call myself The Man.
Yeah, The Man, for sure. Now, I know that you've attended multiple colleges, including Chicago State University and Lake Forest College. You've worked in banking. You've sat on boards. How did that all shape your strategies that you developed and help others with?
Because I learned about hunger and I learned about corporate strategy. And the thing about corporate strategies and hunger is the streets teach you something that you can't learn in a corporate boardroom. And that is being able to sell. Because I fashioned myself as being able to, I can sell salt to a slug, venom to a snake, and snow to Santa Claus. So you got to be just that good.
You know? I love
it. You got to be able to sell yourself in such a way, because that's what it's all about. Can you sell a product? Not yourself, but the product. And then you got to be able to sell yourself in the same tangent. So when you can actually sound so good and be so smooth that everybody is buying whatever you're selling, that's it.
That's it. That's all there is to it. Now, I think it's important that we take a moment to talk about, I guess, your life experience, because that obviously ended up in your TPS blueprint. Can you give us a bit of a background about the experiences you've been through, the highs and the lows?
I think the lows were, you know, growing up and realizing we used to sit on the front porch of the house and watch these guys drive by in these fancy cars and they were with the girls and so forth. It's like, you know what, I want to be them. And then when I got to a point where the opportunity was there to be them, and then I myself got into some legal trouble, so to speak, and I realized, you know what, this is not the way.
Yeah.
But then in the same token, there were other people that I realized that were actually dying in the streets, right? Yeah. So when I realized this dying in the street was not my thing, and then I actually had people that were actually mentoring me inadvertently, because it's like, no, you can't do this, no, you can't do this. And they would be like, you know what? They keep me on a straight and narrow, despite the fact that I'm like, you know what? I like this fast money. This is easy. But they were smart enough to tell me, you know what? This is not the way. And they realized I had a gift, you know, the gift of being able to sell and the gift of being able to attract people. Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, I realized, you know what, my path was going to be different. So from that point, it was like the corporate strategy and how to be able to, you know, make things happen, how to use leverage, how to turn around and, you know, take advantage of OPM, other people's money, and being able to be in a position where you could actually do things that would keep you out of trouble.
Yeah.
Because so often the young people in the inner cities, they're introduced to the quick money, but the bottom line of it is nobody gives them another avenue. And I would give them other avenues.
Yeah, absolutely great feedback. Thank you so much. Now, you've got both the TPS blueprint and HDR model. where did those frameworks actually come from, and what was their genesis, I guess? What was that moment in time? Can you recall that moment where you said, look, this is the way I want to go, these frameworks?
The thing of it was that I realized, you know, I'm a military historian, and everything came down to military science, right? There was a Walter Cronkite back in the 1970s that was on CBS News, and I watched these guerrillas, right? And I was watching the guerrillas in Vietnam. But meantime, as a kid, I have to tell the story that's funny because the gorilla was McGilla Gorilla, the cartoon. So I tell people this story. I'm like, up until I was about 12 years old, I thought the gorilla was McGilla Gorilla. And I'm like, that's a badass gorilla. That gorilla's bad. I need some of that. So I go in the closet. And I'm like, yeah.
I love it.
I'm down with this, right? Yeah. So then I began to understand and reading military strategies and what it was all about. So I'm realizing the gorillas are beating, you know, the United States out of Saigon and so forth. So I was like, you know what? Let me figure out what the strategy is all about. And what I realized, everything came down to timing, precision, and synchronicity. And to clean that up, timing is just being at the right place at the right time. Precision is that you can't miss. And synchronicity is everything has to fit together, like in conjunction. And when you look at history, right, everything came down to that. If it were not for just something simple as timing, synchronicity, and precision, everybody in this world would now be speaking German. Because if it had not been for the fact that Rommel would have listened to his strategist telling him not to go to Northern Africa and getting caught up in the sandstorms, Africa would have been taken. Same thing with the situation with the northern part of Russia and Siberia. The Germans went in there and unfortunately speaking, they froze to death because they weren't prepared, because they weren't listening. So there again is the concept of you have to understand that concept. You can be at the right place at the right time, but not be in sync. Everything goes left on you and you can't win. So life comes down to that. If you've got those three principles together, you can't lose.
Yeah, fantastic. Now, I want to talk a little bit about mindset, because you've, again, at the lowest point, you went from a point of homelessness to working with Fortune 500 companies and high net worth individuals. What sort of mindset shift do you need to go through to be in one location one time and then working with these high net individuals the next? It must have been transformational for you.
I went through the process. There was a home fire that we had when I was a young adult. And from that, I had to look at that house, right, and say to myself, the insurance company is not coming to fix it. The adjusters are not coming. I'm going to get in there and I'm going to turn around. I need some place to live. And we had furniture that was still in the house. And I went in the house and I tore all the walls out. I found a dumpster. I got the dumpster to start cleaning it up. And I went from there because my thing was the determination to exist.
Yeah.
And again, being an historian, I realized that 400 years of slavery, right? And I looked at 100 million of my ancestors came over on those boats, the diaspora and so forth, and they went through all types of horrific situations. So my thing of it is, how can I fail? It is impossible to fail when you look at what you come from, the stock that you come from. And over the years, I did the DNA studies of finding out that I was an ancient ancestor of Ramses III. And I'm like, you know what? I come from royalty. I come from regalness. And I come from people that came from a place where they came here and they had no language, no religion, no creed, no nothing. And if they managed to survive here, I'd be damned if I can't survive. So that's what it was. It was like, I cannot fail. And, you know, that's what I say to people. If you look at your heritage, and that's so important, you know, when we look at nationalities, it's so important to understand where you came from, because when you realize that, you realize the stock that you come from, you can't fail.
You can't fail. Yeah, look, that's, again, you know, I would never have thought to look back in our lineage like that, but I can tell, you know, it makes all the sense in the world now. Now, you've had decades, literally, of experience, and you mentioned earlier, inadvertently, you had mentors and people like that around who were guiding you. Do you sort of still seek out those types of people?
Actually, in so many ways, they find me.
Yeah.
Because we end up in the same scenario, we end up in the same events, conferences, and so forth, and social functions. And so we develop a camaraderie, and all of a sudden we're talking, and they get my card, I get their card, and we start talking, we do dinner, and it happens like that. And so they sit down, and, you know, a lot of the old timers like, listen, youngin', you know, that's where they refer to me as a young man. Listen, youngster, I've got to school you up on what the game is all about.
You check this out.
Right, it's wisdom, right? Because I'm coming in there as a young whippersnapper, like, you know what? I hear you, but I got a different way of doing this.
Yeah, have you considered this?
That's right. No. Look at what can go wrong from what you're thinking. And what always say that I do with the youngsters now is like, listen, let me explain you something. Some things are tried and true are always going to work the same way, no matter what you do. So I've had to learn how to be humble and be the dumbest person in the room and accept the fact that I don't know, accept the fact that I need to learn, and realize you're always learning no matter what.
Yeah, look, that's the whole I'm a white belt in karate thing, isn't it? You know, you might be skilled mm-hmm. and have all the experience in the world, but you can always learn more. Now, mm-hmm. you are obviously a writer, a coach, you're investing, speaking. What do you think you're the best at out of all those things?
Negotiating.
Negotiating. And why would you think that?
Because that's what I do best. I'm negotiating every day, from whether it's talking to the ladies or doing just general deals. I'm negotiating.
You're into it. Now, I want you to just give us that, I guess, the high-level overview of the journey that you had to live personally from homelessness to success. And was it years that took to go from one space to the other?
Yes, sir. I mean, I think the biggest obstacle was getting out of your own way. See, I had to realize that I have no choice.
Mm.
Failure was not an option, so I had no choice because help wasn't coming.
Mm.
So there's a statement that says, you all you got. I had to realize I'm all I got. So help wasn't coming. There was no relatives. There were no friends. And I come from a family that has wealth, but it didn't descend down my way. So therefore, there was no choice but to make it happen. And see, the hardest part about it is when you're sitting there, you're licking your wounds, you're going, well, there's money in the family. Well, you ain't got it, so what you gonna do now? You know, that's what I kept saying to myself, what you gonna do now?
Mm.
And so that overview comes down to saying to myself, no matter what, every single day I had to get up and say to myself, I gotta kick my own ass and kick it in the gear. I cannot sit there and keep on saying, well, what you gonna do now? Well, it's bad. Well, it's this. Well, it's that. There's always gonna be a problem. The option is there is no option. There is no such thing as, well, you know what? Today I'm just gonna take a day off. Nope. 24/7 days a week, 365. Keep grinding. Keep hustling.
I love it. You know, you started writing at some point. What inspired you to pick up the pen? In actual fact, do you use a pen and paper?
Oh yeah, pen and paper, tape recorder. A notepad. I got hundreds of scratch pads.
Yeah.
I've got an account with Staples where I probably spend $30,000 a month in notebooks and pads. What got me? I mean, literally, when I said $30,000, it's just literally that much. I got some papers and pads around. But here's what got me: pain.
Pain.
When you are in pain, my therapy, and I've never gone to a therapist, never sat down and, you know, talking to a shrink. My daughter happens to be a psychiatric person, and she deals in that as a psychologist, but, my thing was, I'm going to write about what I'm going through. And I have a storage full of just notes and speeches and documents and stories about all the pain that I went through, all the struggles, all the pains of other people, stories about clients and sellers and buyers. And it's like, you know what? I'm just going to talk about it. So what I got started in writing was based upon I'm talking about those struggles, those pains, those hardships, those successes. And I just kept on writing until all of a sudden I had a book. And the original book was 1,000 pages. We had to condense it, but I told a lot of stories about a lot of things going on. Good, bad love stories, sad stories. I just told them all.
Did you find it hard to stop? Because it's like an endless source of inspiration, really, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the hardest part of it is which stories to tell.
Yeah.
Which anecdotes to tell, how to frame it up to where the people that were involved are not mentioned and so forth for obvious reasons. But, you know, you want to just turn around and tell the story. And I try to tell funny stories because one of the things about life is if you can laugh at yourself, and I found myself just constantly being able to laugh. If you can't laugh and you can't deal with the things you go through with some humor, that's a problem. I mean, one of the funniest stories I tell was I got arrested one time for being a bad boy at the time. And I'm in the cell and I'm watching how these guys are going behind this curtain. And I'm asking the guy in the cell with me, I said, what are they doing? He goes, they're doing a penis check. And I'm like, say what? He goes, yeah, they're on a penis check. So I'm going, what are they checking it with? He's like, with a Q-tip. I'm like, uh-oh. So I'm in the corner going, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, Father's, I'm Catholic. Father, Son, Holy Spirit,
Father's, you know. No Q-tip.
All of a sudden, it's better. All of a sudden, the guy goes, Ross. I go, uh-oh. He goes, you're free to go. So this is where it gets funnier, right? So I'm walking across the tier. It's like this huge yard, like indoors, and there's tiers to the Cook County Jail. It's in Chicago. So there's four tiers to it. So this guy goes, hey, fresh fish is on tonight. I'm like, no, no, ain't no bait tonight, my friend. No, no, I'm not here.
I'll pass.
That's right. No, no, not tonight.
Oh, look, this is just this is inspiration for why people should read your works. Now, tell us a little bit about the mastering the TPS blueprint, your guide to thriving. Tell us how it's constructed.
It's designed in such a way where I talk about all the things that everybody goes through. I mean, we all go through depression, we go through anxiety, we go through all the different things that from family trauma to family curses, to dealing with yourself, to points of how to turn around and move forward, to pulling yourself out of that depth of depression, to pulling yourself together when you know you are where you need to be. And I mean, I even talk about the PTSD. There's urban PTSD and there's suburban PTSD. In the urban America, it's like a war zone in some cases. So you're dealing in these areas where there's, whether it's the public housing projects or whether you're dealing in neighborhoods that are under siege, and the suburban areas, it's like, you know, you have women that are undergoing the husband that's abusive or whatever the case may be, or the wife, whatever the case may be, and there's the closet alcoholism, there are all the issues that go on. And I talk about that, like, listen, there's nothing to be afraid of, there's nothing wrong with going through stuff. It's the question whether or not you can get through it, and you can get through it with a better prescription of how you're gonna make your life better.
Yeah. Do you intend to write any other books? And how long did that one take you to write?
That one was written over the course of probably about 5 years. And there's another one I'm coming out with now, which is The Dating Appraisal, where I get hardcore into what dating is like as a man after the age of 50 and what happens as you're dating, you know, in this whole world of the new world of dating, you know, dating over 50 and the things you go through. You know, it's very not different. Easy at that point in time because you're dealing with a different series of women and they've been through things, you've been through things, and how do you turn around and appraise what someone is like when you're looking at, okay, do I want to be with this person?
Yeah, look, there's certainly a lot to be learned there. But with your, I guess, your experiences as an author, what have you learned about yourself through the pen?
I have learned that I have a way with the word.
Mm-hmm.
I have a way to make people really appreciate the humor of it. And I learned that my stories are everybody's stories, you know, because I'm telling stories that happened to me, whether it was out on a date, whether it was a business deal, or whether it was just generally just things that I was going through in my general life and, you know, how things are. I mean, one of the things that I make a funny story about is a taxi cab driver, when the two taxi cab drivers got to argue with each other, and the one taxi cab driver gets out, pulls his pants down, and moons the other guy. You know, I tell funny stories, and I'm like, you know what? This is really happening in New York City.
Yeah, and it happens every single day. I'd just like to switch gears, if we might, about leadership. Mm-hmm. You know, you've obviously had a lot of experience in this world too. Tell me a little bit about your views on leadership, and what do you enjoy about it most?
I think one of the biggest things was in getting involved in social boards and corporate boards was this, to say to some leaders, listen, I actually visit your company and I actually visit this business incognito. I'll walk in there with torn jeans on and moccasins on, and I want to see how their employees are treating me, because that gives me an indication of what you're teaching as a culture. And so often these folks do not turn around and recognize that they don't spend time with their employees. And the employees are feeling disrespected. The leadership chain does not understand how to lead. And more importantly speaking, when I say how to lead, it's like, you don't treat your employees like trash. You have to give them respect. And more importantly speaking, so often in these corporations, you have a lot of the employees that are just disgusted.
Yeah.
Because they don't see, first of all, the money coming down the pipeline like it should, wages. They don't see themselves being respected at the jobs they do. And the third most important thing is feeling as though they are attached to the company, like the old Sears and the IBMs and the GEs. They just don't see it anymore. They see, okay, this company is just about making money for the CEO. He's making $50 million and I'm barely getting by.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
The 80-20 rule, isn't it? You know, 20% get 80% of the wealth. So I think about certain people that I've been observing recently through videos, and they talk about leadership is about you working for your employees. Do you agree with that sentiment?
I'll go a step further with that. Not only are you working for your employees, but as an employer, one of my first things that I say to everybody that works with me, I appreciate you. I appreciate what you do. And I go to the point of going out, and I've got probably a couple hundred employees, and I go out and make sure that I turn around. And when I say employees, these are people that work for me, whether it's the parking attendant, whether it's the laundromat gal, or whoever it is that's doing something simple for me. Here is the $20 in your pocket. Here's the $50 in your pocket. And, you know, the guy that rents my car, here's $100 for you guys to enjoy your dinner. Sometimes something as simple as, are you appreciating them? Are you reaching in your pocket and being like, yo, you know what? I see you.
Yeah.
I see what you're going through. Maybe that gal that actually just washed the clothes at the laundromat, she could use $30 or $40 just so she can buy diapers. You're not thinking about that. And I realize that because I've been there.
Yeah.
So I make sure that I work for them in that way. Here's something for you to appreciate you. And I always say, I appreciate you. I keep telling them, I appreciate you. I appreciate what you do.
Yeah, it's just like me right now, Darius. I really appreciate you joining me on the show. I'm having such a wonderful time. Great insights. Thanks again. Now, I know that you enjoy speaking. Do you have plans for more speaking arrangements? How does that come about for you?
I have speaking engagements literally anytime a corporation needs me, or non-for-profits or social organizations, or even executives that you know, deal with coaching and everything else. But basically, it's just a matter of whenever the need calls or need arises, I'm available.
You're there. And you also offer one-on-one coaching. Tell us a little bit about that.
The one-on-one coaching, I have a couple of different processes there. One of my biggest programs is a no BS program, which is basically no bullshit.
Yep.
I say to you as a executive, listen, I don't know about how you operate. I don't know how you function, but in here, I'm the controller. And I need you to understand, listen, that at the end of the day, when you finish with this program, I'm going to get you to a point where you're going to appreciate how you got here. You know, what your leadership issues are all about, and how you should lead and how you should function. Because so often, people don't lead from respect principle. They're so used to walking around and stomping their feet and letting their employees know, listen, you don't exist.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... Go ahead.
And my thing of it is making sure that I cut BS from them, and I chop you down to size so as you understand, you have to come in here humble, and being humble to the point that you understand that you've got to make this company work, because you've got to tie these employees into the ROI.
Yeah, absolutely. Otherwise, there's no use in trying, because it's like slapping a dead fish, isn't it? Trying to get it to swim still. But, you know, who is your ideal client? Who do you prefer to work with?
I like to work with entrepreneurs. I don't mind working with corporate folks. I think the biggest thing of it is a client that is willing to turn around and realize they don't have the answers, and they're looking for answers, and they want someone that's creative. And I bring the creativity to them, and I position them to say, listen, let's put everything at the door, and let's come in here with creativity and be able to understand that the answers are going to be found, and we're going to find them, but be open enough and honest enough with yourself to realize you're here for a reason. I am your last resort.
Yeah.
You sought me out because I'm bringing something to the table that you need.
You know, I sit and I think about people like you after discussing all of the things we've touched on in our brief time together, Darius, and I think, how does it make you feel personally with all the things you've been through in life when you can positively impact people that you work with? How does it make you feel?
I feel excellent because here's the big thing. Every single day when I'm walking around the streets and I'm looking at someone that is homeless or indigenous, I think to myself, you know what? But by the grace of God go I could be in his shoes. So when I think about the things that I'm doing, I'm making sure that other people have choices where they don't end up in that position, because I don't know how that person got there. And I've talked to many people that have been there, and I realize sometimes it's based upon taking advice, making a different decision, or being in a different mindset.
Yeah.
So my thing of it is, when I look at those people, I don't feel sorry for them. I feel, you know what, I'm blessed, because I feel not sorry, but I feel ingenuous, or, you know, genuinely humble, because I realize I could be in their same shoes. So I don't feel sorry for them. I have respect for them, because I understand what can happen when you are riding the tide of success and all of a sudden everything changes. And it can be something as simple as a marriage went wrong or something happened in life. And I say, you know what, the job that I'm doing is worthwhile, because so many people don't really realize they're one step away from that disaster.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you can if you can help anybody who's on that precipice, that's certainly what we should be doing. Now, with all that being said, when somebody does want to reach out to you, where are they going to find you, and what's the process? You know, do you have an onboarding process when somebody wants to work with you?
They can reach out to me at DariusWrites.com. That's D-A-R-I-U-S, Writes, W-R-I-T-E-S.com. Or they have my email, which is Darius@DariusRoss.com.
That's easy. Well, look, anybody who's on today's call, what a wonderful call it has been. I hope you've enjoyed as much as I've enjoyed speaking with Darius today. Now, if you want to reach out to Darius and start working with him, finding his works, I'll be making sure that the links to everything you need are below this post. And with that being said, Darius, great call. Thank you very much for joining me on the My Future Business Show today.
Thank you. I appreciate it.